The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello everyone, my name is Jonathan Dornbush and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation. And I can hear myself a lot better this week because I'm using different headphones and it's really throwing me off from the beginning of the show, so this should be a fun one. We do actually have a bit of PlayStation news to jump into, including a brand new PlayStation studio acquisition, though it's one that PlayStation already kind of had a partnership with. And we've also got some other PlayStation news and impressions to jump into, but before we do, I'm joined this week by Mark Medina. Mark, hello.
Your hair is so big, I didn't even know you were wearing headphones.
That's why they're earbuds, technically. So yeah, that's why I finally was like, I should stop hiding all of this hair that I've grown out.
And here I need so many more inches to cover these headphones, but I'll maybe by next week.
You'll get, yeah, I was gonna say within a month or so you should be there. Mm-hmm. We're also joined this week by Jada Griffin. Jada, hello.
Hello, hello. Hey, embrace the curls, Jonathan. Embrace them. They will embrace you back and they will warm you through the winter. The winter that is coming.
That the winter that's coming in another year, because we just passed.
Yes, yes.
Like a month. It's like a month from summer.
I had to keep my hair really short growing up because I went to a Catholic school. And so if it was past my ears or past the collar, you like instantly got detention. So I never, like, my hair was always very short, very well kept there. And so I had no idea I could do this. So I thought I'd just give it a try and see what happens.
Pandemic is the perfect time to try new hairstyles.
Yeah. No one can see it, and except for watching the show. So unfortunately, I apologize to everyone out there who doesn't like it, but I've enjoyed it so far. Anyway,
and that's all that matters.
This isn't just a hair care podcast. We are here, of course, to talk about PlayStation and Severance. Of course, Mark, I'm sure we'll discuss that later. But
Severance! Oh my gosh, what a show! What a show!
We'll let that be a tangent later in the show because I do have some questions for you. But before we get there, I do want to jump into the biggest PlayStation news of the week and probably some of the bigger PlayStation news that we've had in quite a few weeks, probably since the last time PlayStation bought a company. And this is an interesting acquisition on our hands because there's some history to it. There's some reasons why, even though it's a new studio, it's one to care about. But PlayStation announced at the beginning of this week, before we recorded the show, they blessed us with early news that they have officially acquired Haven Studios. Now, for those at home, you might have heard the name Haven, but you might not be able to think of any games that Haven has made because they haven't made any games yet. Haven was a recently announced studio about almost a year ago to the day this announcement was made of this acquisition. Haven, which is run by Jade Raymond, and we'll get into Jade's career in a little bit, but they announced a partnership with PlayStation to produce a game that would be exclusively published by PlayStation on consoles, presumably leaving the door open to a PC release as well. And now a year later, PlayStation apparently, I guess, likes that project enough that they just acquired Haven. Haven is now just officially a PlayStation studio. This brings PlayStation up to, I believe, 18 internal studios. We didn't get a name, much more information about the game. We did sort of get a little bit more explicit confirmation about it, and we'll kind of get into what the game itself is in a little bit, other than it being a live service multiplayer game, but we'll get into why that kind of makes sense with the recent PlayStation moves. But you know, this is a big deal, I think, for a lot of players who maybe, even if you don't know Jade Raymond's name, you probably know games she's made. She was a really instrumental figure in the original Assassin's Creed. She was a producer on it and one of the, you know, kind of creators at the start of it, and was a longtime producer of that series. And then, unfortunately, through sort of a string of bad luck, Jade Raymond kept joining teams with really exciting opportunities and then never got to release a game. And much like Amy Hennig, my whole thing has been like, just someone let Jade Raymond release a game. So it feels like PlayStation is finally going to be the place where she gets to. Just to quickly recap, she joined, what was it first? EA. She joined Motive to work on a game and was sort of working with the team that Amy Hennig was working with Visceral and Motive, to make a Star Wars game that never happened. She left EA to then work at Google, where she was going to be the lead of Google's internal gaming studios for Stadia. When Stadia wasn't working out, she left as well, and then went on to found Haven, because I guess, you know, deciding to actually form a studio yourself means you have a bit more control over things. But now she's at PlayStation. We'll get into more details. I just want to lay that groundwork. But just to start off with things, Jade, I'll start with you. You know, not knowing much about this game, how excited are you for the fact that, you know, PlayStation picked up the studio?
So I'd say I'm like cautiously optimistic about it, just because we still don't know what this game is going to be, what it's going to look like, how PlayStation is going to handle a multiplayer like live service type game. Like, obviously they have the pedigree of Bungie coming in with Destiny. That's going to hopefully help with that. But I really like the fact that PlayStation believes enough in the studio that they're willing to just go ahead and acquire them from the ground floor, basically right at the start. They're not waiting for them to like, hey, you got to release a game and sell millions of copies, you know, be one of our 20 million plus titles to join the PlayStation family. This is showing PlayStation is really growing their roots, like they did 15 plus years ago with Insomniac and Sony Santa Monica and all the other, and Guerrilla and all these other great studios that are under the PlayStation umbrella. And this is just, you know, it's par for the course for them. This is their strategy continuing on. So I'm excited.
And Mark, how about you? How's this acquisition been for you?
I love this idea that Jade Raymond, when Google Stadia was just getting off the ground, it was like Jade Raymond is going to be in charge over there. So now we know that Google Stadia is going to be a success. And then when she left, you're like, oh, well, that's the end of Google Stadia. And it is funny that she hasn't, nothing against like her pedigree itself. It is kind of funny, though, that it's like she has had this thing where it's like she joins things and you think, OK, this is going to be really good. And then exactly like you're saying, it's bad luck, and then she doesn't get to do the things she's hired to do. So it sounds like what they're working on might end up being something special. It's really hard for me to get excited for a game I don't know anything about, and the things that I do know about it is that it's a live service multiplayer game. Those aren't the like unannounced live service multiplayer games are not the words that get Mark Medina excited for a video game, but once we see it, maybe it'll end up being really, really good. But yeah, I agree with you, Jonathan. I think it'll be really nice to see Jade Raymond be able to like actually do the thing she was hired to do, or now has created a studio to do. They must have looked at the game and thought, yeah, we want this to be like our thing, right? They have mentioned about wanting to push this like live service model, and this must be one of the, what was it, like 10 over the next like couple years or something like that, games that they want to launch. So they must have seen what they're working on and thought, yep, this is going to be really cool. Let's acquire them before they show anything and other people get interested. So exciting times, but I'm not excited yet. I'll be excited later when they show me a game.
Yeah, that makes sense.
My headphones have died, so I'm going to keep going. You guys,
awesome.
We started the episode and Dormush is like, yo, I got the best headphones ever. You rave for 10
of
minutes.
Course.
These are the coolest headphones you'll ever see.
I can't believe it.
Anyway. I see your headphones now, Dormush. Yep, how'd those work out for you?
It sucks, because then my hair is just going to be all weird and flat against the sides of my head. I was so excited, and now here we are. It's so disappointing for me. Anyway, what's not disappointing is this acquisition. But yeah, no, I mean, Mark, to your point, it's definitely not knowing a thing about the game. We did get to see some artwork on the Haven Studios website. Finally, there are some like brief images up there right now. But other than that, it's kind of like a live service multiplayer game means nothing until we know what the hooks are, what the gameplay is. They've said their quote unquote, the game is built upon a systemic and evolving world focused on delivering freedom, thrill and playfulness. But again, that could mean anything. We don't know. Like, that could mean something that's not as combat focused. That could mean something that's more like experiential. It could be something that is combat focused. It could be more PvE. There might not be PvP. Like, we don't know anything kind of about it at this point. And so the hope is that there's something there. But, you know, Jade has such a pedigree and such a history of things that even though she hasn't gotten to release a project recently, I think it's very exciting to see a creator like her at PlayStation, because I think it's a little bit more of a secure backing than EA attempting sort of its new studio setup that things weren't quite working and shifting at the time, or Google trying a brand new gaming venture when Google often gives up on things if it's not going exactly the way they want to. Whereas here, it's like, no, we've seen PlayStation really stick to teams, Jada, as you were saying, exactly. Like, they built teams from the ground up, so many amazing teams, and you know, both people at the heads of those teams and the quality of talent all throughout. You know, that's something that they're really good at building from the ground up. So to be able to do that with Jade at the head, with all of her institutional knowledge, is really, really exciting as a foundational new studio for PlayStation. But yeah, it's an interesting time for this, because a year ago, this was just a partnership.
PlayStation also has this like really, really, really cool trend that I like, where not only do they have this like library of studios, but they also like they're really good at like pushing their talent, right? Mm-hmm. When you see God of War, you know, it's not just, you know, Sony Santa Monica, like, well, God of War 2018, it was like Corey Barlog, right? Like, people knew who that was, and people knew Herman Holst and Sean Layden and all these like studio heads, like you, the Insomniac people, like, you know who these people are. And so it's like Haven Studios, now you have Jade Raymond. And it's like, it's kind of funny that like you can really, really associate studios with their studio heads or like prominent members. And it's like, that's something that it seems like they're kind of continuing the trend with here. They're not just acquiring studios, they're acquiring people. And so I hope that leads to some really cool things. It has so far. So yeah.
Well, and they're acquiring people who I think also are pretty good at making sure that their teams are well respected and accounted for. Like, it, there has been, I think, this problem throughout gaming and, you know, in all art of, oh, a game, like, you know, Corey for God of War, but Corey is not the only person who made God of War. Like, the, and, and I think those people have been really great at, like, in any interview I think I've done with Corey, he is very quick to give praise to, you know, people from the writing team, the design team, the level team, whatnot, of like, no, this is a game made by hundreds of people. And I think Jade, with the small team that they're building, it seems to be like, we really want to cultivate this group as a group of really skilled developers. And so I hope we continue to see that as we learn more about their game. Because it, you know,
kind of the,
a single name only can go so far if the rest of the team isn't there.
It's kind of the same with like Naughty Dog. Like, you know, Neil Druckmann, but it's like, you also know, like, just all the other people there, like Arnie and I forget who his like Neil Druckmann's like partner used to be. I forget his name.
Bruce Straley.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, and also it's like a new generation of Naughty Dog people, even though they've been there for a long time, like Kurt Margineau and Sean Eskayeg, who did shift over to Square for a little bit, but is back there. Like, those two have been really rising up in you know, the ranks of Naughty Dog after being there for a very long time. They've done incredible work throughout the years, but I think like people are starting to recognize their names more, basically. And so it's cool to see that it is not left to a single person as sort of the definition of these hundreds plus, you know, studios. With that said, though, I did also just want to briefly mention, of course, I think there's been a sudden like rush to speculate of, okay, this is the latest PlayStation acquisition. And it's one of the, you know, they did several partnerships like Haven last year with Firewalk Studio for another multiplayer game that's in the works, and Deviation Games, which is also made up of former Call of Duty leads. And so I think a lot of people have been quick to be like, well, those two studios are going to be acquired next, right? That's how this all works. If those projects are going well, that'll happen. And it's like, maybe one day, but there's sort of a like a bit of a difference with some of them. And I know the three of us were talking beforehand, even because our producer Red was like, what games can I pull from Firewalk? And it's like, well, they're a brand new studio. And they're also part of a three-team company known as Probably Monsters. And so Probably Monsters would have to sell off Firewalk to Sony, or Sony would have to potentially look at buying all of Probably Monsters. I'm curious what you both think, and maybe, Jade, I'll start with you. I've seen, I think, like, PlayStation's acquisitions have kind of fallen into really clear buckets of companies that they've worked really well with, either newer companies or long-term companies. But, like, there's been a clear history and relationship with teams like Housemarque and Bluepoint. Haven, obviously, that's a newer one, but they clearly liked that partnership. I don't think PlayStation's going to rush to grab a team unless they're very confident that they fit into the PlayStation sort of, you know, work ethic and things that they're focused on and that sort of stuff. But what do you think?
Yeah, I think for studios that they're going to acquire going forward, and even just like what we've seen recently, is they have to do something that Sony is either missing, or it has to be additive to what Sony is already doing. Like, it needs to be a studio that exemplifies what they are as a brand. It needs to exemplify what their strategy is for not only short term, but long term in the PlayStation strategy map. And I think, you know, we've got Bungie, we've got Bluepoint, we've got Haven, and there's a bunch of others I'm missing that have recently happened. These are happening sooner than we've gotten in the past, like, couple of years, I feel like. At least there's just more news around it, at least. But I feel like we're going to see more of these, but I'm not, like, in a rush to see these studios get added, if that makes sense. Like, it's going to be great when we start to see more of these studios added to the PlayStation family, but I don't think Sony's in a rush for it. I think they're just kind of playing their own game right now and trying to, like, really set themselves up for success in the future. And I think that's really what this plan of all these acquisitions have been. And yes, that's kind of the overall plan for acquisitions in general, but I think it more so feeds into PlayStation's overall strategy and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, I think acquisitions are, I think they're the most fun, weirdly, when they're obvious. Like, when Xbox bought Bethesda, I was so thrown off by that. And I had a lot of trouble. Like, I'm a huge Bethesda fan, and and honestly, like, Fallout 4 is the reason the Fallout franchise is the reason I work at IGN. I've told that story a million times. Is like, I was brought on because I love Fallout so much that I covered Fallout 4 and stuff, and it's like, so that was such a weird acquisition to me, and I still to this day don't know how I feel about it. My wife was clicking through Game Pass yesterday because she hadn't played her Xbox in a while, and so she was clicking through it. She's like, oh my god, Doom, Elder Scrolls, and I'm like, I know, like, it's so weird when they acquire something, it's like, boom, this, like, dump of games on Game Pass, and it's like a million different versions of Doom. I will say my favorite kinds of acquisitions are the ones like Housemarque and Bluepoint, where it's like, hey, we acquired Housemarque, and it's like, of course you did. They've been mostly exclusive to PlayStation since, like, forever. I know there are some games like Next Machina that were also on PC, but it's like, of course, that completely makes sense. And the same with Bluepoint. You're like, yeah, you're making these awesome remakes that have just been exclusive to PlayStation. It 100% makes sense for you guys to. The Bungie one's still a little weird for me, because I just don't know what the plan is there. Like, it's not a finalized deal, and I don't think it is, at least. But also, it's just like, they've been so weird about the messaging for it, where it's like, hey, we're acquired by PlayStation, but, like, this doesn't mean anything. And you're like, okay, then why did it happen? So yeah. I'm just, like, waiting to find out what exactly that means.
The Bungie one is, I think, a really interesting exception to the rule, because it is very much like, even though PlayStation and Bungie, I think, have, like, it's fair to say, have been partnered for a bit with, like, exclusives for Destiny and whatnot for both Destiny 1 and 2, like, they're not an immediate assumption of a partner that you would think of, but it very clearly seems to be a, like, Bungie wanted some financial backing and the ability to expand into things. Sony on a corporate level can offer that, and that's why they're not a PlayStation studio currently, because they want to still be their own thing, but both sides can essentially mutually benefit from, I think, more behind the scenes things than, like, publishing game exclusive things.
Yeah, I think the weird thing that's messaging with when it comes to Bungie is the fact that it's like, nothing is changing with Destiny 2, and you're like, okay, well, that's all you guys do. So that's all they can kind of say right now without, like, announcing things that they're not really ready to announce. Like,
totally.
I'm sure they would love to say the words like, nothing's changing with Destiny 2, but this is giving us money to be able to make the Destiny Netflix show or just some other unannounced games. But they can't announce those things yet. So right now they have to just say, we're still an independent studio and nothing is changing, right? Like, nothing is changing yet. Something will change eventually, and
oh yeah,
you'll have to. They'll never say like, "Hey, we're able to make the show because of the PlayStation deal," but those things will kind of come in fruition. Oh, all of a sudden they're making this movie. That's probably because of the PlayStation deal.
I mean, I think
especially because that'll be PlayStation Studios.
Exactly. They don't even need to explicitly say without the deal, this wouldn't have happened. It'll just be like, well, it has a right. PlayStation Productions logo on it. Or, mm-hmm. you know, there's a Sony Music collaboration with artists for Destiny trailers going forward or something like that. Like, that'll just
well, be. And to be honest, like, that's what I'm waiting for Xbox and Bethesda as well. It's like, you're kind of, you're still scratching your head. Like, what is the point of this deal, right? They, other than the fact that they just own Bethesda, but I'm waiting for, hey, this other studio that we own is now making not Fallout 5, but a Fallout spinoff. And you're like, okay, there it is. Like, they bought them for their properties and they just haven't done anything with them yet. But the second those announcements start coming out, then the deal starts to make sense. Because right now the deal is just, we own ZeniMax now. And
I mean, I think
nothing's changed.
Right now the deal for them is to have more Game Pass games.
I mean, sure. Yeah. Like, yeah, you need games to go on Game Pass, though. So,
oh, and like, but I mean, that's all the Bethesda games will be on there. So, like, I think the idea right. is just like that makes Game Pass the obvious home for a Bethesda interested player is, I think, like their current goal.
Jada's there's some. I was just saying they're empowering their ecosystem. They're around Game Pass. That's what they're doing. I do have a question that I was thinking, and this is totally on a tangent, but you guys. Mark was mentioning a Destiny movie. Jonathan, who would you like to see star in a Destiny movie?
You're asking someone who played about 5 hours of Destiny 1. So
give me an actor.
I mean, you got to have Lance Reddick in there, though.
There you go.
That's what I was going to say. I'm like,
nice.
It already has a good cast. You get Lance Reddick, you get Nathan Fillion. Like, it's already cast.
That's true. It is.
I mean, of course, I think Tom Holland should star as the main player character. Sure.
There you go. Sure. Yep.
Who's Chris Pratt going to play? He'll play Ghost.
he's the Ghost. Chris Platt.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Pratt
plays the Ghost. Yep. Yeah. I almost called him Chris Platt Praise the Ghost. Kind of still works.
That sounds like an Elden Ring message.
Chris Platt, Praise the Ghost is a second line.
Praise the Ghost, view ahead.
But I would assume he would be in it. I assume as Mark mentioned, Nathan Fillion. I know that I would like to eventually try Destiny because I hear the amazing like story stuff they've been doing, and I know that Deborah Wilson is playing the Witch Queen or is involved in the Witch Queen expansion, and she is a phenomenal actress. Like, she is so good. So I would love for her to get more roles, whether it's as that role or something else. But do you have people in mind to be in a Destiny movie? Or
let's see. I would like to see, I'm just going to go off of other Hollywood castings from video game movies and stuff right now. So I would like to see brought in. We know Kevin Hart is playing Roland in Borderlands. So I'd like to see him also do Destiny just so we can get that kind of weird kind of like comparison. I think that would be really good. Plus, if he does end up getting like a dramatic character, he plays really good dramatic roles. So I would love to see Kevin Hart in that. And you know what? I did a poster for this that had Gal Gadot and Kevin Hart and The Rock. So I'd love to see those three. I'm just trying to bring my vision, my very terrible Photoshop vision to life. And I will reshare that in the repost for this tweet when we tweet this show out so people can see my terrible, terrible Photoshop work. But it's actually kind of good. So
I like that the things I want to bring to life from this episode are to let Jade Raymond make a game and you're like, I just want The Rock to be in the Destiny movie.
It's all I've ever wanted. It's so funny to see how much Hollywood is like kind of, I don't know, I want to say like infiltrating, but that's kind of a harsh word, into the game space. It's not like
it's integrating. It's kind of new, like, but it's integrating.
Yeah, but it's like, have you seen the cast for Tiny Tina? It's Ashley Burch, which is a voice actress, but then it's like Will Arnett, Andy Samberg,
and Wanda Sykes. Like,
oh,
yeah,
and Wanda Sykes, right? And so you're just like, these are like, I don't want to say real actors, but it's like it's so weird because you have someone like Ashley Burch, who like we know and love. And but it's like, is she like a Hollywood actress? But she's acting alongside of Will Arnett, right? Like, well, who's been in movies and shows and Andy Samberg, Brooklyn. Like, yeah. it's so weird, this like mesh of things.
To be fair, though, like Ashley Burch has been making, you know, waves doing other stuff outside of voice acting. Like, she's, you know, she's one of the main cast in Mythic Quest, which is a phenomenal show on Apple Plus. I'm just giving Mark a way to segue into Severance. But yeah, she's been doing stuff like that for a while now. And so it's great. You know, she's got a voice actor for a Disney show, Molly McGee and the Ghost, I think, or something like that. I can't remember. So she's been doing a lot of stuff. So I wouldn't even put her on like a different level. It's just they had different paths and they're intersecting now at games is the way I look at it.
I think for me, the thing is Hollywood sort of pushed aside voice actors. Like, that's a big problem with animated movies in general. And like, we're still seeing it with the Mario movie, but it's like voice actors would get pushed aside, especially in the early 2000s, to put a bunch of celebrities in your movie because they saw it worked in Shrek or a Disney movie. And then so suddenly every DreamWorks and Pixar and Disney movie suddenly stopped using voice actors who are trained professionals to do this stuff. And I think as games started to get more cinematic and have more of those ambitions, a lot of them found more outlets there. But because of now the crossover that's happening more and more, to your point, Mark, I think we're just starting to see those lines blur, which I think is hopefully for the better, because all of these different actors have all these incredible strengths. And I don't think like an actor who has done a lot of great game stuff can't also be in movies or television. Even if it's just other voice work, maybe they don't want to do on camera work because it is very different acting. Like on camera work is very different from voice. Yep. So I just think it's like it's kind of a, both sides are starting to realize that. But also to your point, I think now that kind of Hollywood goes in waves. It was like a lot of animation was a big deal in the early 2000s. Then we got into a superhero phase. And now as people are looking for IP, because superheroes are so locked to either DC or Marvel, video games are kind of this open wild west of free IP, and Sony is leaning into it, but Sony is the only game company that's aligned with a studio in that way. And so I think
also
I think Death Stranding was like the first one that like really like hit me hard, where it's like you have Norman Reedus and Mads Mikkelsen acting alongside Troy Baker, right? And it's like, again, I'm not discrediting Troy Baker. I think he's
phenomenal,
greatest voice actors to ever exist, right? But like, it's so strange. Like, I don't know how to describe it. I like this whole like melding of you know, getting actual like movie and TV actors kind of mixed in with voice actors, because I'm sure it gives the voice actors this like cool opportunity to work alongside these like Hollywood actors. And I don't know, it's just kind of a cool thing to see the bridge. But it also, you know, bring it back around to Destiny, it also becomes this weird thing where you're like, if you were to make like the Horizon movie, you're like, well, who would play Silence? And you're like, it would be Lance Reddick.
Oh,
why
wouldn't
it be Lance Reddick? And it's same with the Destiny movie. It's like Lance Reddick would play Zavala, and you would have there's a boy, and you would have Nathan Fillion play Cade and all that stuff. So it's like, it becomes this weird thing. Like, Death Stranding was a movie, Norman Reedus would just play Sam. Like, it just kind of makes sense there.
Yeah
Well,
awesome.
I think we're gonna just see the lines between everything start to blur, especially as more games have these inclinations to go a little bit more cinematic with their approach, and, you know, can reach that fidelity. And I think actors see it as another outlet, you know, especially with these, like the white stages that they're all acting in the mocap studios aren't that different from Star Wars and Lord of the Rings acting against green screens. Like, they have a little bit more equipment on their faces, but that's pretty much it. Like, that for a lot of them, I do think there is a bridge that is more easy to cross now, because that's just become such a common part of Hollywood filmmaking. So I think we're going to probably see it more and more.
I remember seeing old Naughty Dog stuff where it's like, I'm opening a door and it's like a styrofoam like board or whatever, and you're like, oh man, they really have to act. But then I've been watching a lot of behind the scenes stuff for Spider-Man No Way Home, and I'm like, oh, he jumped off a building. No, he jumped off a styrofoam crate.
Yep.
Like, and he's just acting like he's jumping off a building.
One fake concrete pole for that highway scene between him and Doc Ock. and then the rest of it is blue screen. And yeah, it's not that different from being on the, like, I'm sure the, obviously there are differences, but like, you know, from a bird's eye view, it's not that far removed. So we'll probably see it a lot more as we continue on. And PlayStation has one of the most prominent studios for that stuff. We've seen, I know there's been a lot of like, oh, what's Kojima working on with PlayStation right now? Because he's been remote watching production happen at PlayStation's studios in LA. He's been watching from back in Japan, kind of like remotely filming stuff for whatever his next project is. So, yeah, I'm sure we're only going to continue seeing it. Hopefully, will there be more Norman Reedus? Who knows? But we'll have to find out in the future.
God, I would love a Death Stranding too. I'm probably alone, but I would love a Death Stranding too.
I think it could be.
We'll get it, but
I really enjoyed that game. But yeah,
I like that game a lot. I would love to see more from that world.
I didn't get far enough in Death Stranding. Last, the only quick question: are there like conveyor belts you can build?
No.
That's what they need for Death Stranding too. They need conveyor belts so you can like transport things from place to place.
You've got like not wire
cannons now.
Yeah, there's cannons now. There's the zip lines. There are things, but I do think they would need to figure out new modes of transportation. A cool conveyor belt that like zips out from a starting point would be a cool one.
Yeah,
I just imagine the storyboard: seven new ways to walk,
or
let's
not
make
walk.
Death Stranding too.
That is a back of the box like blurb if I've ever seen one. Seven new ways to walk, Death Stranding.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Anyway, speaking of games that obviously require a ton of motion capture on those stages, Gran Turismo 7 has been in the news a lot as well. It's not true at all. But Gran Turismo is, moving on to some other PlayStation news that's worth talking about, has kind of come under fire at a point. We were just talking about Haven Studios and their multiplayer online sort of focus, PlayStation's ambition to have 10 of these games by 2026. And Gran Turismo 7 is the latest and probably biggest example of a PlayStation game going online focused, with, you know, a multiplayer environment, a DLC environment. It's kind of come under fire for its microtransaction systems, and we can get into that. But there was a really sort of big problem that I think is worth addressing from late last week, where people couldn't play GT7 for, I think it was over a day, basically due to a like server connection issue, because GT7, even though you can play it primarily single player, requires an always online connection. People could not play GT7 for 24 plus hours. And this caused a lot of frustration for people who are like, but I just want to do time trials. I just want to do my races on my own. I don't need to race other people right now. But because of this requirement, people were locked out. And now, granted, it was just a day and it's passed now. The servers are back up and running. There are some other things to dip into. But I think for some people, Mark, I'll start with you on this one. I don't think we've seen this from a lot of PlayStation games before. I do think it's very prevalent on a lot of PC games, a lot of third-party games. Always online requirements, especially for single-player games, are weird. It creates a worrying sort of, precedent for the future for people. The idea that, like, well, what if I just want to play the next Naughty Dog game, but it always requires an always online connection? I think people are starting to worry, is that going to be the future for PlayStation games? Do you see this as potentially an isolated moment, something to learn from, or do you think this is sort of a worrying sign of PlayStation's dive into multiplayer games?
It is incredibly frustrating to have a game that you've paid money for and not be able to play it because of something on out of your control, correct? Like, that is insanely frustrating. It doesn't matter if it was I don't know when this was. I don't know if it was like a Monday or a Tuesday. Like, it doesn't matter. Not everybody works Monday through Friday. And so if you have Tuesday off and you want to play your game that you spent all this money for and you can't, that is like insanely frustrating, right? But the thing is, I hate to say it. This is not anything new. Mm-hmm. We've been renting is not the right word, but like, we have been buying licenses for video games for a long time now. Games that at any moment can more or less be taken away from us, because not like single player games, but how many MMOs have people invested hundreds of thousands of hours into that have then just shut down? Right. There are still games that exist now that you just all of a sudden it's like, hey, we're taking the servers down for this. Like, Halo was a big prominent one. They took the Halo 2 servers down and that was like a big deal for people. I hesitate to bring it up because it's a weird one, but like, Anthem is a game that exists that will not exist pretty soon. And once they take the servers down for Anthem, you will never be able to play that game again. This game that people do like is just gone. Right. So I think people just kind of need to wrap their head around the fact that it's like every time you buy a game like Gran Turismo that has this like online thing, sorry, this game is going to not exist one day. And I don't know if it's a trend that will stop or can be stopped. So I definitely feel for the people that wanted to play this game and didn't get to. But the other frustrating thing about this is the game is, I guess, has a lot of microtransactions and some of them are kind of expensive. But people are finding exploits to get past those microtransactions. You would think that that would be a fine thing because they're finding ways to play the game to make it where they don't have to spend money. But the people that are spending money are feeling a little jaded now because they're like, hey, I spent money on this car, but apparently if I just exploit the game, I could have gotten it for free. Well, what the hell? Like, why are there things in this game that are making it where I'm having to pay for things, but other people aren't, just because they're willing to cheat? And it shows that there's just, you take both of those things combined and it shows that there's still a lot of work to be done when it comes to online only games. But it's honestly one of those things where it's like, I fear for the future where every single game is like, has a shelf life because they require online connections and servers to be ran that eventually aren't going to be maintained.
And just to your point, and then Jada, I want to ask you about this, just to mention for clarity for people who haven't heard about this sort of exploit thing. Essentially, people are figuring out a way to you remote play GT7 on your PC and then run a script, and then people are essentially able to have it keep running a race over and over and accruing coins in game. So it's not something that it's like you leave your PS5 on and just rubber band the control, like the thumbstick.
We've done that in the past.
Yeah. Oh, that's how I unlocked Super Smash Brothers Melee characters when it was like, play 900 battles. It would just, you know, rubber band the controller so they kept running off the stage to die. But this is...
Well, Forza had that exact thing. It had a thing where the accessibility is so good, I guess you could say, with Forza. It's almost too good. Where if you can hold down R2, the game will just play itself. Like, there are so many accessibility features where you're just like, it will just keep you in the middle of the thing and do all the turns for you. And so what people were doing is there are some races in Forza that take 15, 20 minutes to complete just one lap, like Goliath and stuff like that. They're making custom races where they're making it where it's like 100 laps, right? So that's hours of gameplay. You rubber band down R2 and you just let it run overnight, and then you finish the race and you just get all that XP. But the microtransactions, I assume Forza has microtransactions. I think they do. But I don't think they're as egregious as they are in GT7 is the difference there.
And so it looks like we lost Jonathan. Jonathan's sound.
There you go.
No, but, there we go.
I held the button down for too long. My mic is great. I really am getting a new mic soon, I promise. The way the microtransactions work this time around, GT Sport, you could just individually purchase cars at a set price. But cars now are bought via in-game currency, and those credits can be purchased as well, and those range from like $2.50 for 100,000 credits or $20 for 2 million credits. I think VGC sort of did some of the math, and this was earlier on. The cost of a car that would have been $5 in GT Sport is almost $40 in GT7, and because of the sort of credit inflation. And there's also been a thing where recently GT7's in-game rewards were reduced during a recent patch of things. And so that has caused all of this frustration among the fan base. And I think I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned from all this. And Jada, I'm curious to hear from you, especially someone I think who plays a lot of multiplayer games, invested in a lot of those different ecosystems. I think it's worth saying all of this, I think, went into practice before Sony has been working with Bungie, and not that Destiny 2 has had a perfect, you know, life cycle of microtransactions and things of that nature.
In-game economies, microtransactions, these are things that are still, I'd say, still are relevantly new. And when it comes to getting it right, even somebody like Apex, who's been around for 3+ years now, they've rebalanced their economy a couple times between how many, you know, how much each skin costs, how much different, you know, how much does a skin cost for a character? How much does a skin cost for a weapon? You know, how much are these bundles? How much are these packs? They do special events where packs are more expensive, but they give cooler things. Other companies that have done, I think that one of the companies that I think that has done the microtransactions the best when it comes to multiplayer games would be Overwatch, because you get the loot crate so often in there playing just on your own, especially during events, that you can literally earn stuff by playing enough. But if you want to finish getting stuff before the event, sometimes you drop 10, 15 bucks to get a couple extra boxes to finish off the event. But GT is, you know, I think this is relatively newer for GT. And I think that this is their first wave of economy balancing. And that's a very important thing in a game like this, because if you allow these exploits that are there to go on for too long, it'll ruin the economy in game. And I don't believe there's any like selling or trading cars between players, so you don't have to worry about that. But you do have to worry about like long-term financial goals for the game. Like, obviously microtransactions are put into these games to extend their shelf life and extend their value beyond the initial $70 purchase. Like, that's nothing new with microtransactions. We've seen that in games since microtransactions became a thing. But, you know, when these exploits become very open and out there and like spread so fast with the internet, like it can tank a economy immediately. And like 10, 15 years ago, when the internet was still like new and budding and there wasn't like everybody wasn't on YouTube and Twitter and Twitch and sharing these exploits, these types of things would have gotten patched and been a lot more silent, and B, might not have even been noticed by the developers, because there would have been like, you know, maybe 10 to 100,000 people using this exploit versus now millions of players could be using this exploit. And that's a big difference when it comes to financial earnings and stuff for this game. That could literally kind of determine if PlayStation and Sony looks at GT7, is this game successful? Was it not successful financially? And kind of can change the future. I'm not saying that it's right to increase the costs or decrease the earnings in game, but I understand what the perspective is from a business angle. It's not always about, you know, how much it sucks for us as players, because it does suck as players. So like, okay, this one race used to get me, I used to be able to do this one race like 10 times to earn enough for a new car. Now I've got to do this race 15 times. So it's way more time before I can get my next car. It sucks. But I mean, we live in a business world. It's a capitalist type society. So like, it's just kind of the way it is. And I'm not happy about it, but you know, it is what it is. I'm a realist. So, but yeah.
I mean, I think both of these problems represent like somewhat new territory. Obviously, these are not the first like online or microtransactions in a PlayStation game or anything like that. They've obviously had multiplayer ecosystems before and DLC and things like that. But I do think like these two, this confluence of events at once is a very like stark moment. And it is something that I think is worth pointing out. Like, this is not a common thing yet among PlayStation games. But I think as we look ahead, as we know, PlayStation is really bullish about making free to play and multiplayer or just multiplayer in general live service stuff a larger part of their offerings. I think, you know, seeing a game where you could theoretically play GT7 on your own forever and not have to worry about any online functionality to lose access to that after paying $70 is really frustrating for players. And I think to then see this shift in microtransactions and to see in-game, you know, rewards reduced simultaneously, like around the same time, is again, as you were saying, Jada, it sucks. It just sucks. And it's something that I hope we can see them respond to. I think what's going to be really interesting is the GT7 fan base clearly seems to have a continued sustained frustration with this. Like, these things happened a couple days ago or they were instituted a few days ago, but they're not just over it. And so I'm very curious to see what the response is from here. Because there is a really great racing game there, but for it to be limited by these things or held back by these things for the player experience, I think goes a long way, not just to, as you were saying, like GT7's considered success, but where they go in the future.
I think also like, I think one of the best things that games can do when it comes to cosmetics is really having a separate pool between like paid for and earnable in game. Like, yes, it's great to be able to earn some of the paid stuff in game with maybe like a separate type of currency. Apex does this very well, where there's like, unique, like if you get a skin for a certain gun or a character, you can get an alternate colored version of that skin if you own it, the base version, by spending either in-game currency or real life currency. So like, and it's kind of a fair way to do it, and that's kind of what they're doing here. But I think also having sometimes unique stuff, maybe like if there's like say a Porsche and there's a special GT edition Porsche that's microtransaction only, but you can earn a same one gameplay wise that just looks a little different with in-game currency. I think that's a good way to go about it personally. It sucks. Yeah, like you want to spend money to get this one, but if the performance is the same between the two cars, does it really matter that one car has a racing stripe and one doesn't?
Well, I think that's part of the problem is that these microtransactions are for cars that perform differently. Like these are.
Yeah. And that's the issue.
Yeah. It's stuff that you can earn in game by earning those, you know, rewards. It's good that there is that avenue. But when it's so easy for someone to buy the better car and just pick it up, it becomes a frustrating point. And like to your point, I think there are games that balance it really well where certain items are only like cosmetics in a lot of games are now the only things you can buy for real money and they don't affect gameplay, whereas gameplay things are earned via in-game currencies and stuff like that. And I think those are ultimately the best path forward when microtransactions are unfortunately just going to be a part of the way we play. I think like the problem is, as much as I think people can be very upset with microtransactions as a thing, very clearly they sell like crazy. Like there's not going to be an end to microtransactions anytime soon. Otherwise, free-to-play games wouldn't exist. They work too well to sell that stuff. And so I think it's really about finding out the economy that works the best. And hopefully they can do that for GT7 before it's too late, because it would be a really big kind of tarnished reputation for one of PlayStation's longest running franchises.
Look at him just dropping more Elden Ring. Like,
Arnish, we're gonna talk about like, Elden Ring now.
Just dropping those Elden Ring little segues.
I wasn't the only one that picked that up.
I was wondering if you guys have spent those $3 for the differently colored Elden Ring sword, or is that just me?
No, I got horse armor torrent.
Man, I gotta find those.
It's so funny that people would probably buy that. Like,
people 100% would.
I would buy horse armor for torrent. Yeah, that, for a torrent. Of course I would.
For Tornish.
For Tornish.
For Tornish.
my favorite horsey boy. I would hand over an unexplicitly amount of money just to make it to give me a hide helm option in that game, because what is the point of making your character? I completely forgot what my character even looks like, because there's spoilers for, not really a spoiler, but like, you can eventually change how you look, and I'm like, why? By that point, you are completely covered head to toe. What does it matter? Why would you change your character? Oh, so that way you can take pictures? The game doesn't have a photo mode. Like, another thing I would pay money
for. That's what I would say. That's what I'd pay for. Give me a proper photo mode. Give me an offline photo mode. I'll give you $5-$10 for that.
Careful.
Bandit. No, you know what I do is, like, careful. I found a...
I know, right? Be know, careful. Right? Everybody else is free. Like,
ooh. I found a really pretty area last night, and here I am opening my equipment, like taking my helm off and all that stuff, so I can like take some decent pictures, because if not, I just look like every other vagabond in the game. So it's like, you know, the things we do, man.
Yep. Anyway,
game's great.
I hope we can see some improvements for GT7 in that regard. You know, obviously, if there are any major adjustments or additions to the game, we'll be sure to talk about them on the show. But I feel for all the players out there who, even with, you know, stuff solved on the server side, at least for now, is, you know, it's always possible something like that can happen again. But hopefully we can see some improvements to the economy in that game, because that is a very frustrating pain point, I can imagine, for a lot of people just wanting to get some cool cars.
Yep.
Moving on from there for some other PlayStation updates, just to briefly let you all know, we talked about a PS5 and PS4 software beta that went live in February for players. This added some different party organization and chat features. That thing is now live for all players today. It also includes the ability to do voice commands. It's sort of still in a preview and only available, I believe, in English. But you can now use voice commands to do some things on your PS5. In addition to that,
Alexa, drive my GT7 car for free.
Oh, people are going to be so mad at you because you definitely made someone's robot go off.
Who is listening to this podcast through their like surround sound system?
Sometimes you'd be surprised. When I'm looking, I listen to podcasts and they mention one of the robots. And the robot says, one of
the robots.
I'm trying to be kind to our listeners, but someone mentioned,
wasn't there a thing that people were like Xbox off, and it was like making their Kinect turn their Xbox
there's
off?
I think there's an Xbox ad where it's like Usher says it or something, and there's some celebrity who says it. Might be Usher or Justin Bieber or someone. There's like an old ad where one of them says it, and it was affecting Xboxes for a while when they were hooked up to Kinect.
That's so funny.
Anyway, Schmalexa may do that, and I apologize. But in addition to that, they also announced some updates to the PS app on your phones for iOS and Android, some additions to the UI. And also, if you use the Remote Play app, it finally has a dark mode. Isn't that wonderful? Probably the biggest thing, though, that they announced, it's not here yet, though, is that variable refresh rate, which is probably the thing people have been asking for the most on PS5. There are several things people have been asking for when it comes to the UI and features and whatnot, folders, themes, etc. But variable refresh rate is sort of one of those things we've known has been in the works. They said it's coming in the coming months, and we'll have some updates on it. You'll be able to turn it on and also be able to turn it on for games that don't necessarily support it. And then they were like, and if it doesn't work and you notice visual problems, just turn it off. But that will be an option. Mark, based on your head nods and mm-hmm's, I assume you're excited somewhat for variable refresh rate. I'm going to put you on the spot.
Yeah, I have a video coming out today explaining all of Ghostwire Tokyo's freaking, like, the game does weird stuff. And it's requiring a 5-minute explainer on how everything works. Like I just want to do a PSA right now. If you're playing Ghostwire Tokyo, there is a big chance you're only playing in 1080p because of a setting you have on your PS5. It's the 120 hertz option. Most people have it set to automatic. If you do, you're playing Ghostwire Tokyo in 1080p. Just a heads up. So you might want to get rid of that bad boy. But yeah, there's like 6 graphics options for that game, and they all do different things because the game has an uncapped frame rate. If you want it to, it's the 120 hertz option. But then it's like got VSync and stuff like that, which are things that like PC players are really normally used to, but not used to in a console game. And there's so many different settings you have to tweak to make the game feel good to me. Hopefully variable refresh rate will help that. They do mention how much it'll help, like screen tearing, refresh rates bouncing all over, frame rates bouncing all over the place, but then also input lag. So yeah, it's something that I am very excited for. And when I saw variable refresh rate, I'm like, no, I'm working on this Ghostwire Tokyo video and it's going to be completely irrelevant, or I'm going to have to change a bunch of things. And they're like, no, it's coming in a few months, Mark. Don't worry. You can still make your Ghostwire Tokyo video.
You have
like,
time.
Thanks, Shuhei Yoshida. Because I know he's working on it personally.
He personally wrote this blog post, even though it's under a different person's name. Yes, exactly. Yes.
He also did the coding. Yeah. He wrote the C++ coding for it.
He's a ghostwriter.
Yep. He's a ghostwriter.
Mark Cerny is just an actor. It's just Shuhei. He built PS5. He's also the one that makes them all. So just every time some PlayStation's like, hey, here's a new update, and people are like, what? Why don't you just make new consoles? Shuhei's trying.
He's busy.
He's trying to make more.
He's
building them. He's also taking pictures of food in San Francisco. Like,
he's also telling while you about building all the great PS5. Indies. You know, give the man.
Yeah,
give
he's
the man a
he's break. A busy guy. Just give him a break.
But
I'm very excited for this feature. Hopefully it comes out sooner than later.
Yeah, VRR will be here in the next few months. For those who don't know what it does, it essentially helps to minimize or eliminate visual artifacting, frame pacing issues, stuff like that, by accounting for and syncing the refresh rate of your display with the PS5 so that things are not, you know, to help minimize screen tearing and stuff like that. So hopefully... Yep. And as Mark said, it can help with things like input lag and whatnot. So hopefully that comes, as you said, sooner than later. We don't have an announcement just yet. There is a screenshot of it as a listed option in the PS5 settings that they put on the PlayStation blog. So clearly they have a like dev build in the works of it. They are testing it out. It is a thing that's like implemented in some form.
Variable refresh rate is all about movement. Here's a screenshot of it in action.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say, I got the update this morning, like right before I did another Returnal run, and I looked at my trophies for a few games, and they actually color coded the end part of the little trophy cards now. So if you're looking at it in the vertical like row listing, they added like bronze, silver, and gold coloring. I didn't look at what the platinum ones look like though. I'll have to go double check that one.
Well, it's not like you have many platinums to look at.
Definitely don't.
Yeah,
it's because you already have them all. So there, you were probably sorted by not earned, and you're like, well, they're on it.
It's too late.
I've earned every trophy.
But yeah, that new update is out. There was also, I think it's starting to get better, or has already by the time we're recording, but there were some also PSN outages. People are having PlayStation Plus subscription connections. Hopefully by the time you're listening to that, if you've been having those issues, first of all, I'm sorry, but hopefully that stuff is fixed by this point. Moving on from there, just a few specific game things to mention. A new Witcher saga was announced. As CD Projekt Red has made it clear, this is not The Witcher 4. We are not saying this is The Witcher 4, but a new Witcher Saga game has been announced. It will be on Unreal Engine 5. Obviously, Witcher is a huge franchise. Probably CD Projekt Red certainly wants to go back to that up after the ups and downs of Cyberpunk, I would imagine. But based on the announcement, based on the way it was phrased and all these things, based on the way that Unreal Engine 5 is, you know, just starting to roll out there for developers to use, this is probably a few years away. I would not expect this on your shelves next year.
Winter 2022. It's coming this year, guys. Witcher. Just calling her.
It's funny and not surprising to see them take the Bethesda Game Studios route, right? Where it's like, they're going to just switch off. We're going to get Witcher in, who knows, right? Like, they announced Cyberpunk 7 years before it came out. And now they're working on Unreal Engine 5, which actually could speed up game development. So like that could be an exciting thing. But you have to assume that the game is probably minimum 5 years out. Which means Cyberpunk 2078 is 10 years out, right? So it's like, it's kind of this weird Bethesda thing, right? Like, when are we going to get Fallout 5? After Elder Scrolls 6, which is after Starfield. So it's like, it's one of those things where I'm like, well, that's exciting, but I'm not the world's biggest Witcher fan, but I do like Cyberpunk. So it's a little disappointing that Cyberpunk 2077-2 is going to be a while out probably, but we still have some expansions on the way. So that's cool.
I'm excited for this one. I didn't put enough time into Witcher 3 as I would have liked to, because I really enjoyed the world, but there's just so many games that came out during its heyday that I just kind of skipped over it. But I really love, I mean, it's known for being one of the best open world games with its side quests. It's really great. And, you know, I personally really liked Gwent. You know, it was, there was a reason why it got its own spinoff games and stuff in it as well. But yeah, I'm really excited to see where it's coming. We know we're going to get a new school of Witchers. The School of the Lynx is what's been announced, which is kind of, it's very interesting to see what this new school is going to look like. Because for those who haven't played The Witcher, there's different schools, School of the Griffin, School of the Cat, School of the, wait, Cat? I think there was one cat. Wolf. There's a whole bunch of different schools.
None of us are going to call you out on it because
yes, please don't.
Exactly. I played 5 hours and then I've just been waiting for the PS5 patch. My girlfriend.
Oh God, I can see the comments now. Why didn't you guys get any Witcher fans for this one small news beat?
Because we had all this PlayStation news to talk about.
But yeah, and they said, and they also said we're not going to be playing. They didn't not say we're going to be playing as Geralt. So like, who knows who we're going to be playing as? Right now, I guess the rumors going around is we're going to be playing as Ciri.
That'd be awesome.
I'd be really excited to see. So we'll see. Well, hopefully we'll hear more on that. But yeah, we're probably looking, what, 2027, 2028, if we're lucky.
Probably. You know, maybe again, like was mentioned, if UE5 helps speed up production, maybe 2026, 2025. Yeah. But yeah,
it's definitely, it also like depends on years. Scope. Yeah, it's years out. And well, and if anybody knows anything about The Witcher 3, it's that the scope is enormous, right? And so the fact that Cyberpunk 2077 came out in what, 2020, but you can basically say they've now that it's on PS5 that they've kind of finished vanilla development now, and then they're gonna have just teams working on the expansions. This has got to be, I mean, this game is like a logo, right? Like, so
I mean, this is this is unfortunately becoming a little bit more of a common trend. Like, I think it helps fans to know to put certain expectations on time frames, but like
this
you
is
said,
a shareholder move though.
Exactly. It's definitely that, especially this comes right before the end of a fiscal year for most companies. So this certainly helps to stir up that excitement. But like you said, Mark, we saw that with Bethesda. They announced Skyrim and Starfield at the same time years ago.
Elder Scrolls 6.
Elder Scrolls 6. Thank you. Skyrim.
But that was also a shareholder move, right?
Exactly.
Like, yeah.
Elder Scrolls 6 had probably started so early development, but they're announcing it because E3 is a trade show.
It
so
was a showing name on a whiteboard, probably.
Yeah, exactly. And so but that is the whole point. It's like, why they're announcing Elder Scrolls 6? Because you're watching at a trade show. They want their stocks to go up. And stocks will go up when they announce that they're working on Elder Scrolls 6. Same with this. Stocks have been, I mean, I don't follow stocks, so I don't know. But I have to assume things had not been great for CD Projekt Red. So them announcing like, hey, we're making a new Elder Scrolls. Witcher. God.
Yeah.
Okay. We've messed each other games up. Yeah.
you know, I have to assume that looks good. Also the same with like BioWare announcing Mass Effect. So we're kind of the same deal. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mass Effect
is not
same.
A game yet, but.
And then 2K with BioShock when they announced BioShock 4, you know, whatever it ends up being, back in 2019 with the new Cloud Chaper studio. You know, we're now 3 years on. Obviously, there's been a pandemic, but like that game was a very early production announcement sort of thing, I think, similar to this. And so that's just, I think it helps fans set expectations for these franchises. But as you said, Mark, I think like first and foremost, it is a way to bolster the company's prospects on a financial level.
Yep.
Yeah. A new Witcher game makes people forget about Cyberpunk. Right. So like, you know, and I'm saying that as a really big Cyberpunk fan.
Yeah,
I love Cyberpunk. So, yeah.
Moving on from there, just to briefly mention, it won't be a PlayStation console exclusive like Predator Hunting Grounds was, but Illphonic, the developers behind that game, announced a new 4v1 game, which is obviously their jam and their genre, called Ghostbusters Spirits Unleashed. Nothing to do with the Ghostbusters franchise. Of course, it's a brand new IP. No, it is a fully licensed Ghostbusters game, including voice actors like Greg Miller are in the game.
That makes sense that Greg's in the game.
But yes, Greg, he's mentioned Ghostbusters once or twice, I believe, in the past. But yeah, this will be a 4v1 game where four people are playing as Ghostbusters. One is playing as the ghost. And yeah, it seems very much up their alley. This game is funny to me because the head of Illphonic, or like one of the leads, I think, is also really big in the music industry. And they were on a music focused podcast talking about their projects, and they just mentioned this Ghostbusters game was in the works like 3 or 4 months ago. And then they just haven't said a thing about it since. But we got an official trailer. It's coming, I believe, later this year. a cool multiplayer opportunity. I think like for some of the problems that their past games have had, the core of them is often pretty fun. And I love Ghostbusters, so this might be a really fun one. I don't know about either of you Ghostbusters fandom, but
no. And I play Predator Hunting Grounds and I did not like it. Fair enough.
Yeah. I would say I'm a casual Ghostbusters fan. I really enjoyed the movies. I watch them probably every 2 years or so. Just kind of like, it's like, you know what? I feel like watching Ghostbusters, just random weird things. So I go and watch it. I've only played the Predators Hunting Grounds at like a PAX before it came out. And I was the Predator and the match was over before it began, basically. Like, I did not give people a chance to learn the controls. So I don't know how I would do in the full version of Predator Hunting Grounds, but I don't know. I have a pedigree for taking out groups of people. So that's kind of, I figure I'd do the same. So
I think that game was like famously pretty broken when it started. But
probably.
Like, I'm not diminishing your abilities, but I do remember
for sure
hearing that game was like famously like the Predator pretty much always won.
Like I said, I played it at a trade show and I attacked people before they had a chance to learn the controls. So, right. You know, that also wasn't fair, but
it's definitely
I enjoyed myself. Yeah. I enjoyed impaling people and lasering people. I mean, it was a good time. So,
yeah,
you know, let's bust some ghosts. I really like Ghostbusters 09. That was one thing I will say. Ghostbusters 09 back on the PS3 was amazing.
Canon third Ghostbusters, basically, right?
It was, I believe so at the time. I don't know if it's still canon,
But
it was really well done. They even kept track of how much collateral damage you did, which was fun and not fun. So I was like, there's sometimes I'd play and I was just like, how much collateral damage can I actually do? How high does this number ticker go?
How bad can we be at our jobs technically? Yeah, this one will be interesting because, being a Ghostbuster, you pretty much only have one weapon with the proton pack. But we'll see what they do to help vary up the gameplay. Obviously, you have some traps and things, but I'm curious how they help kind of vary up the gameplay. But we'll see later this year. I think Reb from our news team actually got to go hands on with it. So that should be up either by the time this posts or near in the future. So check that out.
I heard that Ghostwire Tokyo is basically just a Ghostbusters game.
It's true. So. Yes. Yeah. They play the theme weirdly. They got the rights to Ray Parker Jr.'s song.
So maybe
there's also the firehouse is also there.
A Ghostbusters fan.
we'll find out when we talk about Ghostwire in a few minutes. But before we do that, just to also briefly mention, we got official confirmation from Rocksteady that Suicide Squad Kill the Justice League was delayed till 2023. We got spring 2023 as a release window, which we didn't have previously. So it's good to know that that one is aiming for a first sort of half of next year launch window. We'll see what happens. But yeah. Rocksteady, cool. You know, we've been waiting long enough at this point. They can just take their time. It's fine with me. Plus we got Gotham Knights in October. But anyway, other than that, also wanted to, I'm just going to briefly mention this in passing and then we'll move on. Xbox gave a talk at GDC and you're probably wondering why am I talking about an Xbox talk? Because between Phil Spencer and Sarah Bond, they mentioned that, you know, they were talking about subscription services and they mentioned how, you know, PlayStation has announced theirs and then moved on. But of course, Spartacus is not announced. So if you see people talking about PlayStation subscription service being announced, it hasn't been yet. Though me saying that now probably means it will be announced in between when we record and when we post, unfortunately.
Jonathan, you don't subscribe to Shuhei Yoshida's Patreon? I got the news directly from him. Like, it's only like 100,000 yen a month, but you get all the inside information right off the bat.
He's just leaking God of War, Ragnarok 2, and it's Sly Cooper 5. I'm sure that's where all that's coming from, his Patreon.
Yeah, shoot. Yeah. He hit me up on the DS, the Picto chat thing. He was like, yo, Spartacus is on the way.
I thought you were going to say DMs. And you misspoke, but no, you went to Picto chat. All right.
You went to Picto chat on the DS.
He hit me in the little chat, and he was like, hey, also, here's a picture of Kratos. What do you think? I was like, it looks nothing like Kratos.
Here's a picture. He's not bald in it. He has hair for some reason. It's really
weird. Yeah. Shuhei, stick to what you know, man. Like,
which is Patreon, of course.
Which is. Yeah, I thought the comment was really funny. I think it's such a funny off the cuff, like, kind of thing. Cause, she's just like, yeah, you know, people, we have our Game Pass subscription and now Sony has announced hers. And I Googled, and I'm like, wait, did they say the words? Did they ever say the words that this is coming? And it's like, no, that's just kind of the power of, like, it's an all but announced situation. Like, mm-hmm. you know, it's coming. We don't know the name of it. We just call it Spartacus because that's what the code name is. And we, like, they've announced these. They haven't announced these, like, tier plans. But it's like, it's the worst kept secret in the world right now. We're just waiting for them to actually say it. But it is kind of funny to show the, like, power of, like, you know, online conversation, that it's like, they've announced it. And it's like, no, we haven't. And it's like, oh, okay. Well, we thought you had, because everybody on Twitter said you guys did.
I think the only full thing that PlayStation has said is, like, they have a response in the works, but what that is, they haven't announced. But we're expecting that, I think, this spring, and it is spring now. It officially turned to spring. So
yep. True.
Very tiny. Sorry, go ahead, finish here.
I was going to say, hopefully that's something we get in the next few weeks before the summer event season kicks in.
I'm still trying to find your breaks in speeching. Fine. Like, I know we've been doing this for months and I'm terrible at it. So no, sue me. But I was going to say, small segue. What if, you know, these tier plans for, and this is something that just came up with the whole economy balancing and all these live service games. What if there's something in the tiers that kind of, like, these always online games like GT7, there's like a boost, like if you're part of the membership, like you get a boost to your in-game earned currency and stuff like that. Is that something you guys would like to see?
I think it would reduce me to tiers, because that sounds complicated.
I just wanted to say reduce me to tears. I think it makes sense, but I also think it would annoy a lot of people, because it does.
I agree.
Unless it is only cosmetically based. If it's anything that is gameplay impactful, I think people would be very upset. I think you could potentially get away with Fortnite kind of does this. They have the Fortnite crew, where essentially you subscribe monthly and you get a bonus costume. Or, like, if you're a PlayStation Plus subscriber, you get a bonus Fortnite costume. I think if they did bonuses for it for PlayStation games, would be one thing. But I think, like, anything that you can get in game and buy money for that someone else can get by not paying as much money suddenly creates this question of, like, well, that, why is that fair? But I think you're onto something in terms of, I wouldn't be shocked if there are perks for these PlayStation multiplayer live service games that get added to their tiers as a result.
Yep.
You guys just made me so much less excited for Spartacus.
It's not even real. We didn't even say a real thing, though,
Mark. That all sounds awful.
Fair enough. Well, hopefully it doesn't disappoint you whenever it gets officially announced. But perhaps, you know, maybe it's one of those situations where every time we say Spartacus, Herman just delays it by a day.
Spartacus.
Oh, no. Don't do that to the leakers, Jada.
Well, I have to assume there's probably a big summer update, right? And that'll be Spartacus and VRR, right? The fact that they're kind of, like, showing these things, and it's like, these are in the coming months. And you're like, okay, well, I've also heard that Spartacus is in the coming months. I was like, we could have a cool summer refresh for the PS5.
I'd be excited. Definitely potential. Yeah. I thought you meant during an event, and I, like, the closer we get to it potentially being a reality, I know some people have questioned whether it'll be. I think Spartacus is a blog post. Like, I think it's a tweet announcement with a
outline. Isn't that supposed to be their, like, Game Pass competitor? You think they would just put it in a blog post?
I think we get a state of play with it in, like, God of War or something.
For me, it's just one of those things where, like, we don't currently have much of a precedent other than the reveal of the PS5 for PlayStation talking about services during a showcase like that. Like, they tend not to do much of that stuff in their shows. I could be wrong, but I think what'll matter is how much PlayStation cares about it. Like, I know it's being billed as the Game Pass competitor, but that's mostly our conjecture and them saying we have a subscription idea in the works. Sure. I don't think they are going to position it as a Game Pass killer, quote unquote. And so I think it just depends on how much they think it's going to be a factor at launch.
I think it really depends on how exciting it is to them and how exciting they'll think it'll be to people. Yeah, if it's just I've said this a million times. If it's just a way to, like, play old games, then it's just a blog post, right? Like, because I don't watch a PlayStation showcase to hear that I get to play Ratchet and Clank A Crack in Time. Like, I just, that's not the space for that. I know that'll excite a lot of people, but, like, that's not what those are for. But if they have something on their hands where they're like, and God of War is coming day one, and, you know, and they do that Game Pass model for at least one or two of their big games, I feel like that's something that they would announce, because, like, they would that would really, really disrupt this idea of like Game Pass is great because every first party game comes day one. If they're able to be like, hey, Spartacus is great, and like not every game, but God of War Ragnarok is going to be there day one on it. Like that is really going to shake up some things. And I could picture them doing something like that. Not them doing it, but if they were to do it, they would announce it at a show, I think.
Yeah, if it's that big a deal.
If it's that big of a deal.
For sure.
It may not be.
we'll hopefully find out soon. GDC would have sort of been a sensible place to announce a thing like that, but not yet. So we'll see. Moving on from there, we're running a little short on time, but I do want to check in with you all about games you've been playing. Jada, I know you've been bouncing around a lot, so I'm going to quickly just start with you. I know you, you've platinumed Stranger of Paradise since we last spoke, correct?
Yep, I did get the platinum on that one. Nice. Yes. Not too bad. Probably, I think I put probably like 60, 70 hours to get the platinum. A little bit. I think my game clock topped over 100 playing some co-op, going and helping other players online. The biggest thing I could say is if you're going for the platinum trophy, some of the things evolved around like the chaos difficulty and getting your classes to a, you have to get one class to 99. And the only way to do that is by playing missions on chaos difficulty, which ranks the missions up to 300 to unlock these class limiters releases. And so you can, some of them are lower, some of them are higher. If you need to play on things up to 300, there are certain missions that are easier to just go in and get gear because it's all gear focused in the end game. There's one mission, I look it up real quick. It's called Coral Memories, The Greedy. And basically there's two bombs. If you're unfamiliar, Final Fantasy fire, they're like fire little bombs. If you hit them with fire spells, they self-destruct. They drop a bunch of gear. They're right next to a save point at the start of the mission. Super easy to get level like 290 plus gear to do some of the higher missions. So that is your Strangers of Paradise trophy tip. But yeah, I've been playing that and Ghostwire Tokyo and a lot of Elden Ring. I'm very early in Ghostwire Tokyo. I'm playing on the Tatari difficulty. So it means no leveling up, forever level one, very minimal skill points. And only way to raise my HP and stuff is by eating food. I'm not sure if you get HP level ups, increases on level up though. Mark, you can probably speak better to that than I can. They do increase on
level up. That's the only way to raise your HP, even on the easiest difficulty.
Is by everything you eat increases your HP.
Yeah, it increases your HP any time you eat food. Yeah, 0.4. I was asking if on level up, if you gain HP on level up.
You mean permanently or like do you get healed?
Yeah, permanently. Go from like 100 to 110 if you on a level up, if you level up or something like that. I don't know what the numbers
There's
are.
There's also a skill point in there where when you absorb cores, you can the more you level it up, you absorb cores, you get XP back or HP back.
That's restoration is whatever. I just mean like increasing your maximum.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
But yeah.
It's my turn. So, yeah, sorry. I was like, wait, I didn't know if I was...
We're transitioning into more Ghostwire talk. So, yeah, go
yeah, ahead. I mean, I talked about Ghostwire last weekend. I don't really have much else to say. The thing I wasn't able to say last weekend, because that was still the preview embargo, is that by last weekend, I had already beaten the game. It's pretty short. Like, as far as open world games go, like, if you mainline it, you could probably beat it in, like, 13 or 14 hours. I beat it in just over 17 hours, and that was with doing like a lot of side stuff, not everything obviously. I haven't had much desire to play much more of it. I think the game's totally fine. I think the combat is super weak, but I said that last week, so but I think the story is good. I think it's well told. I think it's semi-simple, but it doesn't overstay its welcome with how short it is. Like when the credits started rolling, I was like, oh, okay, that in other games this entire story could have been a prologue, to be honest with you. So I kind of like that this was like the story. I'm totally fine with that. So I like it. I'm playing a lot of Elden Ring still because that game is fun. And then that's it. I haven't been playing anything else. I'm going to play Tiny Tina this weekend. I haven't played it yet because we only got PC versions early, and me and my wife played Borderlands 3 completely co-op, so we're going to do that again for Tiny Tina. So waiting to buy the PS5 version when it comes out. But I've also been watching The Morning Show. That show is great.
Of course, yes.
If you have not watched it, it deals with a lot of tough issues in the workplace. But that show is awesome because I'm caught up on Severance, so there's nothing else to watch.
That's fair. We've only got a couple more weeks to Severance. It's going to be tough.
Oh, no, don't say it.
I know. I'm sorry. It's like 3 weeks left, I think.
So. Well, I'm going to, once it's done, I'm going to rewatch the whole thing as like a real long movie, because it's like,
do a speed.
That is a really great way to watch that show. And now having to piecemeal the episodes, like I watched last Friday just with everybody else, and it'll be the same for the next few weeks. What a great show, man.
It's very good. It's very, very good. Jada, have you watched it?
Severance, I haven't started it yet. I am waiting for the full season to drop, and then I'm going to binge it like Mark's planning to do for his rewatch.
Gotcha.
I've been binging, as crazy as I've been binging Legends of Tomorrow. I'm like finishing up season 7, and I did just binge the third season of Pose. And if you haven't watched Pose yet, watch Pose. It is about ballroom culture in New York, and it is fantastic. It is one of my favorite shows that has ever been made. Pose is amazing.
I've heard really great stuff about Pose. Yeah,
I've never even heard of it. So
FX, I believe it. It's one of Ryan Murphy. Ryan Murphy produced it.
Yes,
I believe.
It's one of Ryan Murphy's. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep.
And he can be hit or miss, but from what I've heard, Pose is very much a hit for him. So yeah,
Pose is amazing.
I need to go check that out at some point. But yeah, just to briefly mention, I did want to, you know, on the Ghostwire trend, I am somewhere in the middle of these two. I haven't beaten it, but I'm close to the end of it. I've done a decent chunk of side stuff. We were talking about it before, like if you're trophy hunting, there is a skill that you can unlock that I guess light spoilers. There is an ability to grapple up to certain a certain type of yokai called a tengu. They are flying on certain building rooftops. If you upgrade the skill, it takes quite a lot of skill points in both Magatama, I believe, is the additional unlock thing you need.
It's like 7 of them.
It's 7.
7.
And then it's 45 skill points. But once you unlock that, you can essentially produce a Tengu wherever you want. You can just call one in, grapple up to it, and use
it.
And there's a lot of collectibles on rooftops of the main sort of spirit collectibles. So that will help you basically circumvent having to like find weird ways to climb up buildings. It's a huge asset if you can get it early.
You essentially become Spider-Man, like you, because you can glide from one building to another and then start pressing the button, and there's a good chance it'll produce one, and you can, and it helps with the main game as well if you want to just like mainline and go for it, because Ghostwire does this really like kind of annoying thing that kind of frustrates me. There was another game that did it as well. I can't remember what I was playing. I was thinking about it, where it's like, you need to get to the top of this roof for this quest. And you're like, okay, you're like looking around this building, trying to get on top. And you're like, oh no, I don't need to get on the top of this roof. I need to get on the top of a roof 3 buildings away and then make my way over. And it kind of does that a little bit towards the end, where I'm like, you're just looking for a way on top of this building, and gets kind of annoying. So that ability really does break the game.
Yeah,
I love it so much.
It is. There's a lot of good abilities I think you can unlock early, or you can watch
for the rapper.
It's part of the review. It's the TP side quests, the toilet paper side quests.
That is a worthless side quest.
What's funny is I believe someone did, not to like fact check our own video review, but apparently that is not a Parappa reference and is a much longer standing reference to Japanese mythology to a certain extent, interestingly.
Yes, I believe that sounds right.
But that is a cool thing about Ghostwire, and I think I totally agree with everything that Mark is not liking about it, but I agree with you in terms of I'm really drawn to the world. I think this world is really cool. It's a really interesting take on an open world that is somewhat horror-y. They, you know, obviously these are Japanese devs making a world that they know very well. Like this version of Shibuya they've created is really beautiful and really well designed and feels like walking around some like smaller, you know, Japanese city streets. I think it really captures that beautifully. And the yokai, the mythology that's wrapped into it, I think is all really cool. I like the main characters. Like I like Akito and KK quite a bit. I mean, I think the story's cool, but I totally agree. I think like the combat is perfunctory at best. Like it is,
it's color by numbers.
Yeah, it's so, I think it's so limited and so basic as a result that after hour 3 or 4 you essentially have seen everything you're going to do in the combat, and it's just a bit of a bummer in that regard.
It looks cooler than it like is fun to play, for sure. Like it looks fancy. It's incredibly basic, how I described it last week is how I would still describe it, which is basically like at its best it's completely fine, And then at its worst, it's like really frustrating because the fact that you just there's a lot of mobility issues and the game wants you to hold buttons so much and it does everything it can do to cancel those holds. Like what would change everything about the game is when you're holding something like you're holding a charge attack or you're holding a core, you should be able to choose to accept the damage that you're about to take and continue to hold the button, right? But the fact that you're taking the damage and it's canceling your hold is it gets beyond frustrating to me. Yeah. And it does get
a little frustrating.
Yeah.
I will say like I find myself having to cancel attacks a lot more, especially on Tatari, because the enemies are way more aggressive on that difficulty. So like they're constantly in my face. So I have to perfect parry. I can't tell you how many attacks I've canceled so I can parry attacks and knock them back. Yeah. So I have to be a lot more strategic. So I think I'm enjoying the combat a little bit more because of that, but I would really love to play this game in VR. I think playing this in VR with how simple the controls and stuff, the combat is, would be an amazing experience in VR.
Yeah, I could totally see that.
You could do the hand motions.
I mean,
exactly.
Oh, I was joking with my girlfriend because she was watching me play, and I kind of like I occasionally will do like an action while he's doing a thing, and she's like, so if it was just Joy-Cons, I would be doing the like, whoa, the weaving and stuff. It would be cool. I totally agree. A VR version of this would actually be awesome. I really hope, like, even though I do have some problems on the gameplay level, I kind of hope we get a sequel or just something from their world and lore and story building that continues this, because I do think they have something there, but I do think they need to make some improvements on the gameplay side. Yep. Other than that, just want to shout out, because I've mentioned it a bunch on the show, I finally beat Persona 5 Royal and, of course, have moved on to playing Persona 4 Golden. And I finally understand the love for P4G. I love it so much, and I'll probably talk about it more when I've played more than 3 hours of it. But that is going to pretty much wrap us up for this week's episode of Podcast Beyond. Thank you, Mark and Jada, for joining me for this week's episode. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Mark is at Mark_Medina, and Jada is at Jada_Rena. Thank you both again. Thank you to Red, our producer, for making the show happen. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. I do want to quickly point you to, if you haven't, we put out the latest of our Inside Stories, which are our really, really awesome documentary style videos that our video team and our features team produce. This one is sort of the inside story of finding Dipman related to Resident Evil 4 and the speedrunning community there. If you don't know that story, it's still worth watching. It's an incredibly well-researched, surprising and really entertaining video. I can't recommend it enough. Go check that out. But until next time, Beyond is live every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific. So come check us out next week as we talk hopefully about more PlayStation acquisitions or other things that happen. And in the meantime, if you have any questions for the show, please write into beyond@ign.com, tweet at all of us, or just tweet hashtag let Jade Raymond make a game, and we'll all make it happen, because it's finally hopefully going to happen this time. Anyway, thank you all so much for joining me. Thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, beyond.
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 Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk turned traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.